B-Pod Studios.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
This may feel strong, but you people are stupid.
OMG! It's Felger and Maz, 95 The Sports Hub.
Oh, see, you guys took my thing. It's my thing. I'm the one who likes to go, huh.
I didn't do it on air.
No.
I'll let you
I mean, if you're going to do it, you got to do it for real.
Right, right. I kind of half-assed it. Didn't sell out to it because I knew it was your thing, Marshall.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you very much. I am Marshall Hook. That's Ted Johnson. Mike O'Brien chipping in with a huh as well. This is the Felger Maserati on a program, which, of course, means that it is an agenda-free Friday. And that, of course, is driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. We've hit on a lot of things. Nobody's taken Obi's bait on the Bruins as of yet. But if that's something you'd
like
to do. In the
middle of July?
I can't say
I'm surprised.
It's still out there. But we are still taking your phone calls, and we do have a couple open lines. So if you say, hey, I never am able to get through to the Felger Maserati program, this is a good time to dial 617-779-0985. I understand neither Felger nor Maserati are here, but some people see that as a good thing or as a welcome change of pace. Not an everyday thing. They're very, very good, but, you know.
They're damn good. They're very good at what they do.
Just every once in a while, maybe it's nice to have a little something else going on, and that's what we're doing today. Ted, I know you kept talking about guys that you liked and didn't like to face off against and came up with even more during the break.
Just one guy that the Patriot fans will know quite well, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say one of the toughest covers, one of the toughest competitors I ever went against was a former teammate of mine who I was drafted with, who went to the New York Jets when Bill Parcells went there, Curtis Martin.
Oh.
Curtis, my favorite Martin, is one of the toughest covers out there. Just one of the most explosive players I've ever played against. He could be right there within your grasp, and he cuts and he explodes out of the cut, and he is gone. So one of the best to ever play the game and was rightly elected into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So Curtis Martin, another difficult cover for me back in the day.
I got to tell you, when we talk about, you know, things that were great when they came to New England in terms of Drew Bledsoe and Bill Parcells, that was a tough time because not only did Bill Parcells bolt for the Jets, but then he took Curtis Martin, and that was a real sucker punch for fans around here because I don't think anyone saw it coming, and it was not only – I mean, he devised the because you remember he was a restricted free agent.
Yes.
And he devised the contract in such a way that there was basically a poison pill in there that made it virtually impossible for the Patriots to match because obviously with restricted free agents you have the right to match.
Yep.
And he built the contract in such a way so that he was going to get Curtis Martin, he was going to screw the Patriots doing it.
It was a 6-year, $36 million deal. I'll never forget. And that was just so far above and beyond what any running back was getting paid at the time. And, yeah, the Patriots had a tough decision to make. They had to sign guys like McGinnis and Johnson later that offseason. They, you know, and I guess, you know, there's just it's only so much you can spend. But that was – that people were throwing out tons of money for running backs. But it's also a very different characteristic of Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick, which is – the comparison of the two coaches is one of my favorite. You were talking about an innings eater. Get me started on comparing those two, and I could do it all day. It's so fun. But Bill Parcells, quote unquote, took care of guys. If you were a Parcells guy, he was going to pay you, and you're going to get paid market value, if not more so. Bill Belichick takes emotion out of all his decisions. Parcells is an emotional guy. He's from Jersey, right? So he's got he would take care of certain guys that he likes, and he loved Curtis Martin, obviously, and so he took care of Curtis with that contract, and it made it you're right, like you said, Marshall, very difficult for the Patriots to match.
It was not a bright and shiny moment to go from you know being in the Super Bowl to that happening right after that Super Bowl appearance was kind of a high and a low, really right next to each other. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. Going as we are apt to do by longest time of wait, we'll join Justin in the truck, who wants to talk about that electronic strike zone. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you, Huck. So I got a quick question for you first, then I'll make my point. Is it that you don't believe the strike zone will get bigger, or you just it just won't?
Well, we don't know. People are conflating these two things. They're conflating an electronic strike zone with a larger strike zone. Strike zone is it's a preset strike zone that a computer will call balls and strikes. It can be preset to whatever size, and we don't know what size that will be.
So I believe Maz brought this up yesterday from the full article that from that All-Star game, that it pinched the corners just a little bit, but it brought the strike zone up to basically the letters, and it also brought it down, so it did expand it that way.
Okay, but that was the Atlantic League strike zone. That's not necessarily what Major League Baseball would do.
Okay, no, I was just seeing what where you stood on it, and I just wanted to make that point that it did make it bigger in that game.
It did in that game. And again, if that was part of it, then that would be me liking it even that much more. Mm-hmm. Like, I am in favor of both those things, a larger strike zone over here and the electronic strike zone over here. And if you can put those two things together into one, which they may do, we just don't know that they may do, then yeah, I'm going to be 100% in favor of that. I mean, listen, we talked about ways to speed up the game either yesterday or the day before. I can't keep one day apart from another right now, but you know, ultimately, there are very limited ways to do it. And what baseball has done so far isn't doing it. Like, they're talking about making changes in extra innings and putting the runner at second base. And extra innings is the one time you don't need to worry about speeding up the game. By virtue of the fact that you're now playing a sudden death game of baseball, people are already intrigued. If you have made it to 10th or plus inning, you probably don't care about the speed of the game at that point. You care about the, you know, this game, in as much as any regular season baseball game can have higher stakes, it's got them. That's not the part of the game you need to speed up. You need to speed up innings 1 through 7, right? And cutting it, you know, getting rid of the intentional walk effectively, that, I mean, literally, how much time does that save? 40 seconds a game, if that? I mean, how many games even have an intentional walk? That's not the way to do it. Mound visits, sure. You're shaving off a tiny little bit there. Commercial, fine. You're doing that. The only way you're truly going to speed up the game is to limit time between pitches, limit time between at-bats, limit the length of at-bats, or, in my opinion, which I offer mostly tongue-in-cheek, is to turn it into a 7-inning game. Because honestly,
that's the only thing that at the end of the day really that would ever work, Marshall.
Because everything else you do inside of a 9-inning game is not going to shave that much time off. You just can't do it. Lop off 2 innings? By the way, if you did that, I believe it would eventually grow back to where it is. But maybe we could, maybe we could leap back 30 years and start growing from back there. Because think about it, if you go to a little league game, if you go to a high school game, a softball game, all those are 7 innings. Like, it's not as though 7 innings doesn't exist in the world. That's a magical number all over the place. And those games are shorter. They're 2 innings shorter.
Isn't baseball, though, like, so big on keeping the game the way now, like it was 50 years ago, because they want the numbers to mean something today and reflect on how they were 50 to 100 years ago. And I just feel like if you take 162 games and, you know, maybe make it 140 games or 150 games, that wasn't how it was 50 years ago. And the baseball purists are going to freak out about it. That's one thing, but I'd be all for making a 7-inning game. I just think baseball purists would freak out.
It'll never happen. Let's all agree it'll never happen. Yeah. But, A, those baseball purists, they're dying off, quite literally. They're older. And I also think that the steroid era so blew up so many of the statistics that we hold dear, like home runs, that at this point, I don't think they mean quite as much as they used to.
I think you're right, because I'm listening to everybody talk about the juiced baseballs, and then you got Rob Manfred, the commissioner, saying they're not juiced, they have less drag on them.
Or something.
I'm sitting here going, where are all the purists freaking out about this? Like, they adjusted the ball so that it does different things than it used to do? Where's the baseball purists used to have a louder voice and be a little bit more vocal when you would hear things like that. It's kind of like, you know, it's a little bit surprising. I think people care less and less about that stuff, like you're saying, Marshall. And one real side note, too, I think having an electronic strike zone that will be maybe a kind of an unintended consequence or a consequence of it is less ejections.
Yeah.
You alluded to it earlier. There will be less ejections in baseball if you have an electronic strike zone because so many managers and players get ejected from games based on arguing balls and strikes.
I mean, as much as I'm annoyed, and I always use Bryce Harper as my example of a guy that argues every ball and strike that comes his way, as much as I'm often annoyed by those players who do that and the managers that do that, that pales in comparison to the annoyance I feel at an umpire who decides that he's the show. He's the show. And, you know, now that you have these guys mic'd up, so not always, like, there was one, and I'm not going to be able to remember all of the specifics, but there was one in which a manager was in an argument with an ump, and the manager was mic'd up, and you were able to hear the ump say, "I can effing do anything I want. I can effing do anything I want." And that's the attitude these guys have, and whether it's power hungry or attention hungry or whatever it is, and it's not the majority of them by any means, but there are this handful of them out there that they want to be involved, and they will actually seek out the conflict. Like, you know, a pitcher gets frustrated on the mound and mumbles something under his breath, and the ump's stepping out from a, what did you say? What, you got something to say to me?
It's so true.
Like, that's not an ump's job in any way, shape, or form. If a batter wants to get into it with a pitcher, fine. Go for it. The ump, you're supposed to sit there like an unbiased Supreme Court justice and an old Supreme Court justice and just, you know, you're not part of this. You're just letting things happen. When called upon, you'll make a decision. Other than that, you know, things come to you. And that's not what they're doing right now. So I think this would go a long way towards kind of getting us back to that ideal where, fine, you know what, pitchers, batters, you're going to grumble. At least we can get the umps out of that that part of the drama.
I wonder if people would miss the arguing, though. The manager coming out, you know, undressing the umpire ejecting, the whole theatrics of the whole thing. People, I think, enjoy that part of the game. That will no longer exist anymore.
No, I don't think it'll still be there because I don't know how many of those really fun arguments actually are balls and strikes. A lot of those are outs at the plate, calls at a base, he was out, he was safe, ejections of a pitcher for hitting a batter. Like, all of that will still exist.
You're right.
I still think you'll get plenty because, don't forget, the rule is if you argue balls and strikes, you're automatically ejected. Like, you can't, I mean, they'll let you say something, but if you really get into it, you don't have to say any of the magic words. You're not allowed by the rules to argue balls and strikes.
I love that there's magic words in baseball. Oh, they didn't say that, did they?
You got to say the magic words. All right, listen, we'll get back to your calls coming up here after a quick break. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. It's the Felger and Maserati program here on an agenda-free Friday, so let's knock out some more of these phone calls. We'll start with Moody in Watertown, who wants to talk about the Patriots receiving corps. What's going on, Moody?
Hey, I want to talk to you guys about the Patriots receiving corps with Demaryius Thomas and Julian Edelman and see how they're going to do with the downfall of Gronk retiring and Brady being able to throw 61 miles an hour and see how they're going to be able to deal with all that.
Do we know for a fact that Tom Brady threw 61 miles an hour? I mean, we saw a clock, you know, stopwatch that said 61 miles per hour, but did we see him literally throw the football 61 miles an hour? We don't need to get bogged down in the details on that. But I'm just throwing that out there. But the receiving core and Demaryius Thomas, do not hold your breath with Demaryius Thomas.
No.
He's coming back from an Achilles injury that he sustained at the end of last season when he was playing for the Houston Texans, I believe in November. And I would honestly, there was once a time when Demaryius Thomas was a top five, top 10 wide receiver in the NFL. He hasn't been that for a very long time, and he's coming off of an Achilles tear. I wouldn't count on that. So I would pin my hopes to guys like Maurice Harris, who they brought in from Washington, and then the first round draft pick in N'Keal Harry, as guys that can maybe come in and make an impact. And I will also tell you this: I am a fan of this player. And there are players that Bill Belichick doesn't play very often. And the stats aren't great. The production doesn't look great. But so everybody assumes they're not that good of a player. And I would put Philip Dorsett in that category. I think Philip Dorsett is a better – but, Ted, he was on the open market in free agency. And nobody seemed to want him. So why do other teams see what you see? I don't know. But when I see Philip Dorsett play, I see a guy who's very productive. When Tom Brady throws him the football, he catches it. I think his completion percentage to Philip Dorsett was in the 90s.
This
unreal.
Is what I was going to say. Like, any time he gets it thrown to him, he catches it pretty much.
Yeah.
And catches it for, you know, substance. You know, he's going somewhere with that or is already somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't have, you know, 1 yard receptions.
That's
and
correct.
They come at important times. So he's definitively an important part in all this. I agree with you. Like, he was traded for and then brought back. Mm-hmm. He was a proactively, you know, gotten player, and he wasn't one of these guys like Demaryius Thomas will probably end up being a big name, or, you know, because Philip Dorsett was a first round draft pick that comes in here. They kind of dabble in like, well, that didn't really work. And then he's out the door. They brought him in. They brought him back a second year. They've re-signed him as a free agent. So, yeah, I think he's a value to this team, and those numbers aren't there. Like, not a lot of people are going to be adding them to their fantasy football team, but he is of value, and I think of important value on this actual real football team.
I agree. And, Marshall, don't worry. This wide receiving core is going to be just fine. I know it's devoid of maybe some big names, but this team, believe it or not, the Patriots, don't look now. They're going back in time. They're going back to the old days in the 80s when they would run the football, you know, 30 times a game with 21 personnel, meaning a fullback is in the game. And so that is what you want. When the Patriots were not kind of, you know, getting in second gear in games, do you know what got their ass in gear? Was bringing in James Devlin to block for Sony Michel, and then they start ripping off big runs, and then that opened up the passing game, and all of a sudden the Patriots would wake up. So this team, believe it or not, and we saw last year, turned into a more balanced team than it's ever been, that relied heavily on its run game, in particular that 21 package. So, look, wide receivers are always going to be important in today's NFL, but in this offense, in this system, you don't maybe have to have those that elite talent at that position because they're such a well-balanced team.
So this seems as good a time as any to broach this topic. I don't know if you've heard. Rob Gronkowski retired. There seems to be some chatter that maybe that retirement won't stick. If you had to lay down a bet, if you had to go over to the casino like I am when we're done with this show today, dreading that a little bit, by the way, but if you were going to do that and there was a prop bet, will Rob Gronkowski play again for the Patriots? Would you lay money on the yay or the nay?
He is not going to be playing football this year for the Patriots, okay? And so here's the thing. It takes two to tango in this deal. So if Gronk wants to come back, who's to say Belichick wants him back?
Robert Kraft? Tom Brady?
Okay. You know what? And Jimmy, that's a very valid point, because what I have learned since being back here, and what I learned from the Seth Wickersham article that came out at the end of 2017, was Tom Brady has more power in this organization than I ever thought he had. And it looks like he might have more power than Bill Belichick, which I never would have thought that when I played for Bill, you know, playing for Bill for 5 years. So you might be right, Jimmy. If in Robert Kraft, I know this for a fact, has influence on the roster and personnel decisions. Okay, I don't need to name exactly.
He should. He's the owner.
You're right. And so your point is a valid one. If the owner wants it and Tom Brady wants it, it seems as though, in particular, Tom Brady now supersedes Bill Belichick when decisions like that. So those are fair points. I just don't think. Okay, I will say this. I don't think Gronk wants to come. You get a taste of retirement. Well,
And the thing is, to look at him right now, I mean, you've seen the pictures of him.
Proof.
He's lost about 700 pounds. Like, he's starting to look like a normal human.
Look, have him hang out with me for a week. I'll put 20 pounds on it.
Yeah. You're right. He is. You look more in football shape, ready to go out in the field
than Rob Gronkowski does. And you can't just get that back. You can't just say, oh, you know what? It's November. I feel like I want to go back and play football.
Thank you for saying that.
And just put it all back on again, right?
Thank you for saying that. Most people think it's just, you know, oh, you come back and play. No. When you're not training for specifically for football and you haven't been getting the reps, to think you can just walk back onto an NFL, on a field, taking 9 or 10 months off completely from the game, you're out of your mind. He can't come back and be an effective player. So there's a lot of truth in that. Just his physical appearance tells me he's done. He's toying with our emotions with a lot of the comments he's saying and kind of keeping that narrative alive. But it looks to me when you see him that he has no intentions of coming back, or else he would be working harder at keeping the weight on, and he's not doing that.
Part of it, I think, it's not just the way he looks and you can't get back to the way you were, but why does he look that way? Well, because he doesn't feel the need, not because he doesn't feel the need. Like, I think, like you, for instance, you're sitting here, you're kind of a muscly fellow, Ted Johnson.
Thank you for noticing.
You don't need to do that for any profession. You look at me and Mike, you don't need that to sit in this room and speak into a microphone.
Yeah.
But you just do it because it's who you are and it's part of, and, you know, it's not easy to do. Like, so Rob Gronkowski clearly has decided that he doesn't need to do that. He doesn't need to be in the gym for 2 hours every day. He doesn't need to lift and push and run and all the things that are involved in doing that.
He's been doing it since he's 12.
And clearly, he walked off the field and said, you know what, I don't need to do that anymore. And it's been how many months since the Super Bowl, and he hasn't felt the need to do it. Like, the thing that drives athletes, I say, as clearly a former professional athlete, back to playing the game is they miss all of those things. They miss the competition. They miss the weight room. They miss doing those things. He doesn't look like a guy who misses it. He looks like a guy who stopped working out and said, you know, this isn't so bad. I don't feel the need to go in there. I don't feel the need. You know, I don't miss being in the gym for X number of hours a day, every day, all week long. So that says not only does the physical appearance say, well, he can't get back into football playing shape, but he doesn't appear to have any desire whatsoever to stay in football playing shape, which says something about where he is mentally as well.
I tell you what, you know, I can tell you the exact time and day that he is going to miss football. Okay? The exact, because right now he doesn't miss it. He's enjoying this newfound freedom he has, not being that feeling in your stomach where you just kind of get feeling sick because training camp is right around the corner and you're like, you're excited, but you're nervous and the anticipation of it is like, ugh, I never miss that. He's going to miss football on September 8th at 8:20 p.m. that Sunday night on September 8th because it's the game.
Yeah.
That's what he's going to miss, the game, the lights, the crowd, the energy, all that comes with it. That's when he'll be like, dang, I kind of missed this. Leading up to it, my guess is he won't miss too much of it.
So how long does it take him once he's back in the gym to get game ready again?
Oh, it would take him, if he was to get back in the gym
on September 8th.
He's like, you know what? I want some of that again. It'd take him at least 2 or 3 months, I think, to get back to
week eight, week nine.
There you go. Okay, gotcha. There you go. Halfway through the season, Mike.
All right, that's the voice of Mike O'Brien. He's going to give you an update on the headlines, and then I know I didn't take a lot of calls that segment. So, guys, I promise we'll get to you after this here on 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
The Sports Hub. It's the Felger and Maserati program on a Friday afternoon with Marshall Hook and Ted Johnson and your calls. Larry and Woburn, welcome to 98.5 The Sports Hub. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on? Hook, you kind of stole my thunder a little bit with the whole seven innings thing. I've been screaming this for a while now. Let them go seven innings. If it's still tied, you go to nine. If it's still tied at nine, you go to a point system. One, the point system works for hockey, so you're going to have an interesting September baseball for once. And if that doesn't work, there's always the other option of doing how Japan does and just put a cap on extra innings. They do it, what, three innings after the nine? So why not do something like that? That will kind of kill the five-hour Red Sox-Yankees games that we're all so lovingly used to now.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox-Yankees is the worst, and here's the thing I'll tell you. Even if you lop the thing down to three innings, the Red Sox-Yankees would find a way to make that last 5 hours. So there is no way around that. Listen, there's no idea, and I didn't really understand all of his ideas, but I will entertain any of them. Major League Baseball will entertain none of them. So there's a level to which it's almost not worth a conversation having because none of them are going to happen. Mm-hmm. None of them are going to happen. And ultimately, it's what you said earlier. It just may be there is no way to speed up this game. It may quite literally be impossible because there are just too many things at play. And that stuff I talked about with the pitchers and the hitters, knowing every little second adds this, that, or the other thing. Until you're able to, you know, police the amount of time between every single pitch, because even pitch clocks don't fully do that. None of it fully does that. You're not going to be able to. I mean, the only way to truly speed it up is to do the radical things that will never happen. You know, three balls, two strikes, seven innings, any of those things, ties. And again, I honestly, extra innings isn't the problem. I don't think extra innings is the problem.
It doesn't go to extra innings that often.
And that's not the length of the game that people, I mean, sure. Yeah. I'm not saying I want to sit down and watch an 18-inning game, but how often does that happen? Once every 3 years?
Right.
The problem is the length of time it takes to play nine innings. And so anything that addresses anything beyond that, I don't think is focusing on what really matters. And again, ultimately, I don't know if there's anything you can do.
I do love that the commissioners today in sports for their league seem to be more open to changing their game now more than ever before. Technology's done that. We're all getting enlightened. There's just been archaic rules in a lot of these games that have been around forever, and it was obvious there were needed changes. I love that about commissioners, but there are certain things that I see them never budging on. And the commissioner of baseball, I can never imagine him ever budging on. Now, I wonder, like, would the players have any issue with that? Making it does all of a sudden, does that mean less jobs?
It does, because all of a sudden you're whacking a whole bunch of relief pitchers.
So that's the only thing I could see where
relief pitchers and bench players, which are at the bottom of the pay scale.
Right.
So there's a degree to which we know the players union cares about the guys who make the money. They don't care about the rookies.
Right.
They don't care about the international signees. They care about the people who've already been there. But they do, at a level, care about number of jobs, which is why the DH is never going anywhere, which is fine by me because
I love the DH.
But it's why it's not going anywhere, because those are some of the highest paying jobs in baseball, DHs.
You know,
so they would absolutely be opposed to the seven innings, because, again, you don't need relief pitchers to the same degree
that you need now. All right, you don't want to sacrifice. Nobody's watching your game anymore. So good luck with that.
All right, well, Josh in the car is asking about something that I definitely want to talk about. So let's get him on the air right now. Josh, welcome.
Hey, gentlemen, happy Friday. So I'll try to be brief. Mike Florio reported that the NFL has created an early model for an 18-game season to pitch to the Players Association with the next collective bargaining agreement. So obviously the model increases the regular season from 16 to 18 games. The biggest restriction is any singular player can only play 16 games. So as a Patriots fan, now I'm thinking, oh, great. So which two games does Brian Hoyer have to start? The only quick questions that I have is, what do you think that does to the position of the backup quarterback in terms of value? Is there a reason that a player would not be receptive to the change? Because essentially, it can give them up to 3 bye weeks in a single season. And what do you think the players get in return by agreeing to those terms? What do you think they can get out of the NFL?
Josh, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
So before we get to anything, I would like you to tackle, what do you think the players would think about an 18-game season under these parameters? Because in the past, I think players have been opposed to it because of the wear and tear that, you know, the difference between playing a preseason game and playing a regular season game is dramatic, right? Because it's always been, we'll add 2 games but take away 2 preseason games, but that's still a material change. Under these parameters, do you think players would be more supportive of it?
For sure. The only thing is, it's still, even though they only have to play 16 regular season games, even though it's an 18-game schedule, based on what the proposal is, that they would be forced to sit out 2 games, it's still time, you know? And so time that you're doing your job. And
I mean, but theoretically, not read the proposal, but they'd be removing 2 preseason games. So it would still be a total of 20 games, right?
And the way it's proposed, I can't imagine them having too many issues with it. Like you said, it's essentially a bye week for 2 more bye weeks for you. Maybe a little bit more of the DGR, designated gross revenue. That might be it. Maybe just you put a little bit more money in our pockets and we'll be open, because obviously the owners would make a ton of money by adding 2 games. So the players would, I think, maybe want a bigger piece of that pie. By percentage points in the designated gross revenue. By the way, this came out today. Did you see? Were you going to say what the total amount of earnings were for the NFL and the give back to each team and revenue sharing? Do you know what that number
is? It's probably going to be more than I make in a year.
It's a little bit more. $274 million each team comes away with after it's they got to divvy up $8.78 billion
in revenue.
Good? That's not bad. It's not bad.
That seems to be an okay moneymaker. So I am fascinated by this notion of playing 18 regular season games, but with only 16, you know, this 16 thing. So we have to take a quick break here, but I want to kind of think about, because that adds a whole level of strategy that has never existed in NFL football before, where you are now looking at, which games am I going to sit my quarterback, or am I going to sit my quarterback and my running back and my best receiver all in the same game and just punt that game away, or hope that I can get by with the backups, or am I going to piecemeal that? Let's talk about that after we take a quick break here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub, it's the Felger and Mass Show. So listen, let's talk about this a little bit, because this notion that in football you can play 18 regular season games but only use all of your players 16 times, that's a tough math problem. I don't even know how you do that. Like, you know, it's easy, and you know, when I first start to think about it, all I think about is the quarterback. Like, all right, well, so you're going to have 2 games with the backup quarterback. And what would be the strategy of that? You know, are you going to, and ignore the Patriots for a second. Let's say you're more of a middle road team and you say, all right, well, there's this team that we absolutely can't beat. Do we throw out our backup for that one? Or do we really try to save our backup for the two, you know, worst mm-hmm. opponents in our perception? But then I start to think about it in terms of the entire roster management. You don't have a backup field goal kicker, a run of the mill, or a punter, or a holder. And then when you talk about units on the field, like to Mike O'Brien's point off the air, so you don't know, but I'll give him credit for break, the offensive line, like that operates more as a unit. So do you have enough players to completely remove them or mix and match? And then it becomes a question of, if you're doing that all season long, isn't that more dangerous for the quarterback? Right. Like, if I'm the quarterback, do I really want to play? Because to do this with only, you know, a 53-man roster, you'd basically be subbing players all year long. You would never play a game, possibly, with your entire full team as you would want it conceived and built. Like, this is my best team, but I can never play them because I need to mix and match all year long. Suddenly, while there's a ton of kind of strategy involved, I don't know how you pull that off.
There's, Marshall, you're bringing up so many of these unintended consequences that would come with this. I think you're just scratching the surface of all these problems that this concept, which is revolutionary, would present. I think it would just be more problems than it's worth. And there's one word that comes to mind when I think of 18-game schedule. Owners want 18 games. Isn't one of the original sins gluttony?
Oh, yeah.
I think so. This is gluttonous. Like, you have by far the best product out there, okay?
Or at the very least, the most profitable.
It's the most profitable. It is making more money hand over fist. I just said each team just found out that they get $274 million to spend on its players. And it's like, not enough? You got to have 18 games? There's a point. Now we have Thursday night games. We have Monday night games. We have, you know, we have double headers. We play on Thanksgiving. We're playing on Saturdays the last couple weekends in London. It's like there's a point. Now we get the Alliance football. Well, we did. You know, it's like now we have these other leagues sprouting up. Aren't we isn't it a little bit too much? And isn't it a little bit gluttonous that it's like, can't we? 16 games, there's a rhythm to it. We love the fact that it's just once a week, 16 games. It gets us so worked up and excited for the fall because there's a finite amount of games you play, and it makes every game that much more important, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about Tom Brady. You talk about the quarterback. Well, when's he going to play? If you're a fan, you're like, what two games am I not going to go to? Because Brian Hoyer is subbing in this week. Or just
who wants to watch backup quarterbacks play against each other?
And if you're Tom Brady, what are you thinking about when your left tackle, your right tackle, or your center? How many teams have a good backup center? Where you're like, oh, you're going to have to take out this one of the five guys that are supposed to protect my bum? Okay. Great plan, guys.
Yeah, I'm going to go out there as Tom Brady and be like, well, there's my left tackle over there sitting on a bench in his street clothes because he can't play today, and this guy, whoever this guy is, I'm now supposed to put my career in the hands of this guy.
Do you know if this rule, say for fun, that this rule was implemented this year? I would make the Patriots, what are they, 6-1 odd favorites to win the Super Bowl? I would make them 2-1 because it would come down to who's smarter at navigating this new system. Who's smarter than everyone else at knowing how to use guys and to kind of get the most out of this new revolutionary concept that they've been given? It's Bill Belichick. He'll know all the angles. He'll know what he's got to look for, what, you know, and all these other coaches that are buffoons when they play against him won't know what to do with all the rules. So I don't know. It would make for, you'd almost have to have, you know, strategy. There'd be so much strategy involved in when to play players, what time of the year, what the games mean at the early in the season versus what they mean at the end of the season, all that kind of stuff would come into play, and you need smart coaches to do all that.
And I do think it would make a substantial change in actual play calling and game planning, both in the individual play and for the game, because you're going to say, all right, well, we're going to go into this one, and we have to sub out these X number of people, and it would be like, well, all right, so this is our plan. We'll take this group of people because our entire game plan will now be built around changing a focus to more of a running game or changing a focus over to literally like this side of the field or whatever it is. It would become such a strategic choice of not this individual player, but this particular group of players as spread around the field and how that makes us a different team. And that would then... You know, that would then inform how you're building your team in the offseason. Like, well, this guy, I know I can move from the left side to the right side, and this guy can do...
You see where this is going?
While there is a level of fascination with the amount of planning and strategy it would take, I don't know that it's worth it.
It's too much.
Particularly, like...
Let's revert
back to the quarterback, all right? So now you're talking about home games versus road games. So if I'm the Patriots or any team, you know, the Chiefs, like... Well, I want my guy to start all eight of my home games. So it may be that one of our easiest, most cake opponents is this home game here against this really bad team. I'm not going to sit my quarterback for a home game. So I'm really only looking at the road games where I'm going to sit my quarterback, where by virtue of just how the NFL works, those are the harder games to begin with. So, you know, the easiest games in theory will be your worst opponent at home, right? If you just remove everything else, your easiest game on the schedule is whoever you think the worst opponent is when you play them at home. Well, you don't want to sit your quarterback for that. So now you're not sitting your quarterback for what is the easiest game. It's for, you know, some game on the road. I keep circling around to all of that is fascinating to think about, and it would make coaches' jobs harder, and it would certainly make talking about the game more interesting at some level, but I don't know, it's worth it.
Can I go a little more macro here? I mean, think about all the other sports, hockey, basketball, baseball, and yes, you have individual players that sit out here and there, and they need some rest, especially in basketball, but you're telling me I'm going to go watch a game or I'm going to see a sport where the best players aren't playing just cause?
That's a fair point, right. And will the fans know? How long will they know in advance?
Think about it when it happens in the NBA. When Greg Popovich does that thing where he says, I'm going to take this game off and sit all my best players.
Yep.
The NBA actively is trying to come up with rules to stop that, and it causes outcry.
Good point.
And now the NFL is going to say, no, we're going to actually put that into the rules where, you know, two games of the year, we're going to, whatever your best players are, they're not going to be out there.
You get the schedule at the beginning of the season, and you see the Raiders in Las Vegas. Boom, get tickets. You can't wait to go see your Patriots play the Raiders in Las Vegas. And you get out there and find out Brian Hoyer is the starter. You know, what you talk about the disappointment. So
that might be the game that all the players want off. They'd be like, hey, coach, hey, we're going to Vegas. Can that be one of my 2 weeks?
That's true, man.
What do you say, Bill? Sound good? Sound good? All right, listen. I know.
You're going to get to the callers next?
We're going to get to the callers. So we're going to do, we're going to take a quick commercial-free. And I'm going to do that thing Felger always says. I'll get to you, I promise. Coming up, after Mike O'Brien updates us on the headlines, I promise we're going to come back. I'm going to say Felger and Maz. I'm going to read a little liner, and then I'm going to take a phone call immediately. That's what's going to happen after O'Brien gives us headlines here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.